We're starting a new series on Ecclesiastes, the wisdom for making the most of life. And it's written by Solomon, one of the wisest people in the world, and it's one of the greatest books of wisdom in the world. In fact, Ecclesiastes is probably the road to Proverbs. And Ecclesiastes starts with the questions, not the answers. And maybe you've had some questions in life, and maybe you should have some questions in life, and maybe life sometimes seems like that video of moving sand from one place to the other without real purpose in life. So we're beginning this series looking at searching. And so we're in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 1 and following. And I'm reading from the NIV, which I think captures this passage the best. It says this: "The words of the teacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning to its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its full of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, 'Look, this is something new'? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens, what heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind." Some amazing words. So we're beginning this new series, and we're looking at searching this morning. I want to start with a humorous fact, something a little different this morning. In 1977, at the time Elvis Presley died, if indeed he really did die, of course, there were some 170 known Elvis impersonators. By the year 2000, the number has risen to 85,000 known Elvis impersonators. If this trend continues, by the year 2019, half the world will be Elvis impersonators, overtaking the Chinese as the largest single group of people on the planet. That's the difference one man can make. Well, it is humorous, and I am an Elvis admirer. He was incredibly talented. I mean, amazingly talented. An incredible voice. He could play the guitar, he could dance, and as any of the women here could attest, he was incredibly good looking. But he died a tragic death, and in fact, for all his success, much of his life was tragic as well. This incredible searching for meaning in his life. And you would think with all the fame and all the fortune, all the success, all the romance that he enjoyed, that he could find real meaning in life. He had cars, he had homes, he had money, he had fame, he had fortune. But his life was full of searching. His life was full of him trying to find satisfaction, which he never really found. And at the time of his death, tragically, he was trying to fill himself with food and with friends, but with money. Success, and none of it brought happiness. It only sort of imploded on itself. And you might look at Elvis and say, that is so sad, and it was sad. But in our own life, how satisfied are we? Are we searching? Are we finding? In fact, most of the great literature in all humankind is about searching. I mean, think about the great Odysseys that we think about. The Odyssey and the Iliad and some of the great American literature. We've been known as a nation of people who are sort of searching and never finding. And so for a moment this morning, let me just ask you to take a survey in your own mind. You don't have to tell anybody. In your own mind, to ask yourself, how satisfied are you on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most satisfied, how satisfied are you with your job? Think about that for a moment, okay? Or with school, all right, if you're on the road to a job. How satisfied are you with your income? Right. How satisfied are you with your home? Just go ahead and put a number on that. Be careful with this one. How satisfied are you with your spouse? Don't even blink. All right. How satisfied are you with your church? How satisfied are you with your pastor? Don't blink. See it. How satisfied are you with your faith? And really, to put it in broad terms, how satisfied are you with your life as a whole? Most of us probably have some room for growth, and it's a journey. It's a journey. And Solomon says, and he has this, all is meaningless. You know, he is striving to find meaning in his life. And when you look at Solomon, who's reputed to be one of the wisest men in the world, certainly of his time, you look at his life, and it's amazing. And so he records his search in Ecclesiastes, which is 12 chapters of unbridled sort of looking life straight in the eye and asking some incredibly deep questions. And he's not afraid to do that. And at times, his search is sort of frantic, and I think if we lean into his search, we can discover some truths in our own life. But you have to remember, he starts with questions, with the hard questions in life. And so with that, let's just dive right in. So he starts out, and he says, the words of the teacher, Koheleth, which is literally the term for teacher or preacher, either one, and he is Solomon, the son of David, king of Jerusalem. So he's already attained some incredible things. But he starts out this way. He says, meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. Now, you might have a translation that says vanity. The Hebrew root is havel. What it literally means is breath. Breath, sort of vapor that's come and gone. And by extension, it means meaninglessness, vanity, also worthlessness, emptiness, futility, meaninglessness in life. And maybe if life right now is meaningless, then maybe there's been a stretch in life, a period in time, where life is meaning. Or you can just flip it upside down and say, what's really going to give you purpose in life? What's going to give you meaning? What's going to answer the search, the question mark, in your life? And he goes on to say, what do people gain from all the labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises again. Wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. Life just goes round and round in circles. And he uses this phrase 28 times in 12 short chapters, nothing new under the sun. You ever felt that way? And some of the smartest people in the world have felt that way. I don't know if you ever read Walden, Henry David Thoreau, who said, I don't read the newspaper anymore, nothing against our newspaper people, because it's all specifics, it's all been done before. I need to really look at the meaning of life. And so he goes away to this pond in the woods and writes some amazing things, because he says, I'm not just going to go around and around in sort of the spinning wheel of life. I'm really going to think about the deep things in life. Now, I know a lot of us saw the solar eclipse this past week. Hopefully you used some good pair of glasses or some sort of technique like that. I had someone give me a pair of glasses at church last Sunday, and Savannah happened to be sick on Monday, and so we both got to see, after the clouds cleared a little bit, some of the solar eclipse, and everybody was staring at the sun. But you know, even the sun, as much as everyone was looking at that, it's happened before, hasn't it? It's not going to happen again here in the United States for another 7 years, so keep your glasses. But he's saying nothing is new under the sun. It's meaningless. It's all been done before. You think you've got the answer. It's not there. Now, how would you like a teacher like that, right? It's just, you know, kind of negative, isn't it? And this isn't just someone who's some sophomore at the coffee shop. Nothing against sophomores, but you know what that literally means, don't you? Sophomore, sophos, wise, and moron. So it's a wise idiot, a sophomore. So you need, you know, just enough philosophy to hurt yourself, right? This isn't some sophomore in philosophy class. This is Solomon, who's reputed to be one of the wisest people in all the earth, who had the resources to search and chase anything he wanted to. In fact, it's recorded in 2 Chronicles and also in 1 Kings. So if you look in 2 Chronicles, it says this. So Solomon, once he sort of had the reign to the throne. Now, Solomon was King David's favorite son, and his mother was Bathsheba. And Solomon goes before the Lord, and he prays, and God asks him what he wants. And this is what it says. So Solomon said to God, you've shown great and steadfast love to my father David, and have made me succeed him as king. O Lord God, let your promise to my father David now be fulfilled. For you've made me king over a people as numerous as the dust of the earth. Give me now wisdom and knowledge to go out and come in before this people, for who can rule this great people of yours? And so God answers Solomon. This is what God answers. Because this was in your heart, and you have not asked for possessions, wealth, honor, or life of those who hate you, and have not even asked for a long life, but have asked for wisdom and knowledge for yourself, that you may rule my people over whom I've made you king. Wisdom and knowledge will be granted you. I will also give you riches, possessions, and honor such as none of the kings had before you, and none will have after you like this. And it's amazing. So God offers him wisdom. He has the wisdom to ask that question, but apparently God didn't give it all in that moment, because God seemed to give him the resources to make the search. And so he had some wisdom in that moment and then grew over life. And so Solomon begins this incredible quest for wisdom. And this is what he says. And this is the wisest man in the world. His conclusion, he says in verse 8, all things are wearisome. More than one can say, the eye has never enough of seeing, nor the ear of its filling. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow him. So Solomon sets out on this course to discover wisdom, and it seems discouraging at first. And so the first thing is sort of under the sun, and it's meaningless. And he uses this great phrase, which I love, chasing the wind. Chasing the wind. I mean, doesn't that sound at least like some phase in your life, chasing the wind or like moving sand? And so he uses that throughout. And so he goes on this course. He says, I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens, what heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun, all of them are meaningless and chasing after the wind. So the first thing he's going to do is he sort of chases the wind himself and records this, is he's going to look at academics and intellectualism. So, and I know, you know, with a lot of Purdue folks here, that's dear and dear to our heart. And this isn't about just learning, it's sort of saying that this is the meaning of life that's in schooling and academics and intellectualism. And this is what he says. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Now, I can tell you, as a person who's been around the university and college life for years and years, more than a dozen years, in higher education learning, a couple master's degrees and a PhD, that it's easy to get sucked into believing that the next degree is going to be the answer to life. It's going to be the answer to life. And, you know, education is a great way, a means to an end, but if it's the end in itself, it becomes sort of a hole, it's a vacuum. And have you ever known someone who thought that the next degree is going to be the answer, the next article, the next research possibility? And good things can come from that, but if it's the answer in life for you, you're going to find it's like chasing the wind. And so he goes on, and I think of my own life, I think of some of the people that I admire. You think of Ernest Hemingway, great writers, or William Faulkner, and how that they really thought a lot about academics and writing and attaining many kinds of things, and yet they didn't find it in that. And Solomon concludes after his search for academics and learning, he says this in verse 17, then I applied myself to understanding wisdom and also of madness and folly, but I learned that this too is chasing after the wind, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. Is that depressing or what? Think about it for a moment. So it's just depressing. And in the Message version, it says this, the more you know, the more you hurt. I mean, that is just, that hurts, doesn't it, to even read that? And you've probably known some people like that. So he doesn't find it in academics. He doesn't find it in intellectualism. And so he goes to pleasure-seeking or hedonism, which is sort of unrestrained pleasure-seeking that's the end of life. And so he moves from the academic halls to the frat house. And he records it. So it's amazing. Sometimes you think the Bible is just sort of, you know, sanitized looking at things. This is just unbridled looking at what is the meaning of life. He said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good, but also prove to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness, and what does pleasure accomplish? So I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly. My mind still guiding me with wisdom, somehow and all that, I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of my life. The Message says it this way, I like this. I said to myself, let's go for it. Experiment with pleasure, have a good time. Have you known people like that? But here's a truth too, and you may have known this, and this can be tragic too. If you try filling the void in your life with alcohol, with drugs, or anything like that that appears to give you pleasure, you're going to find that it's emptiness. You're going to find that it's meaninglessness in life, and he finds exactly that. And so he finds that it's just chasing after the wind, and then he moves from that to, from pleasure to materialism. Now, here's a guy that has the resources to pursue the great materialisms of life and all the things, and so he moves to that. First thing is building projects. He was going to be a great builder, and he says this, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself. Now, not just one house, but houses. You know, you've got to have not just a mansion, but you've got to have a vacation home at the beach and maybe one in the mountains. And so he builds multiple houses, and then I planted vineyards in case he wants to go back to the wine thing. He's going to have his own vineyard. And it's nice to have a glass of wine with meal. Don't get me wrong, but if that's your answer in life. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. So he didn't want to have to sprinkle all that stuff, so he had reservoirs to water all that, of course. But there's more. He says, I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. In that day, that was a way to take care of your house. You have all these houses, you don't want to take care of them, so you're going to hire staff for all that and to take care of his vineyards. And then he says, I also own more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. That was a way to flaunt your money. So you've got flocks of cows and goats and all kinds of things. I suppose it's still a great way to sort of flaunt your wealth. And then he goes on, he says, I've got all this silver and gold. And then he goes on to say in verse 8 of chapter 2, I acquired male and female singers. So, you know, if you've got enough money, you don't want to just, you know, go to a concert now and then. You want to buy the band. You want to buy the symphony and the concert hall and all that so he can hold concerts by his reservoir and by his lake. And then, I don't quite know what to do with this, but I'll just sort of say it. He says, and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. And it's reputed that Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Not recommended in Scripture, only recorded. And apparently the credit cards to support all that. And doesn't find happiness. So you know, it's just one person that's your spouse, right? And he goes on to say, I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this my wisdom stayed with me. So he was the person that the paparazzi followed. They wanted to see something going on. You check with Solomon. He said, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward of all my toil. And all that, and he looks at academics and intellectualism. He looks at unbridled pleasure seeking. He looks at material goods. He looks at all kinds of things, and this is what he concludes. He says, yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done, and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, chasing after the wind. It sort of imploded, it collapsed on itself, and he goes on to pursue wisdom. He said, then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and madness and folly. What could be done as a king's successor had already been done. And then he says, you know, there's something to be said for wisdom, but in the end, the fool dies the same as the wise person. And so it's all meaningless. It's all temporary. This is what he said. Then I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless, for the wise like the fool will not be remembered. The days have already come and both have been forgotten. It's like your life is like you throw a stone into the water and the ripples go out and then the ripples are gone. And life is gone and the impact that you have. And finally he turns to work. And so this is what he says in verse 17 of chapter 2. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless and chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I have poured my effort and the skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all the toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. And when they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled over it, this too is meaningless and a great misfortune. You work 40 or 50 years, pour your life into a business or an organization, into a career, and then you retire and you pass away and it's gone in an instant. And he says, listen, if that's all there is to life, it's just searching and chasing the wind. And isn't that true? And so each of those things has some merit if it's not your sole purpose in life. There's something to be said for academics. I've poured a lot of my life into that intellectual pursuits. There's something to be said to pleasure in moderation. There's something to be said for material kinds of things that are to be enjoyed. But if that's your purpose in life and you're just striving after that, you're going to find that it ends in just emptiness and chasing after the wind. And this is what he comes to in sort of the beginning of a conclusion. He's got a long ways to go yet in searching. He says this in verse 24. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases God, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. In other words, our purpose needs to be aligned with God. And when our purpose and priorities are aligned with God's purpose and priorities for our life, then all these things have a modicum of pleasure. But if we just pursue them, it'll just be chasing the wind. And if you think about your own life, I mean, I didn't grow up with a lot of money or anything, but Savannah and I, on our vacation, one of our stops, one of the last stops, was Colorado Springs. It was near Father's Day there, and Savannah gave me this bolo tie, which I really wanted, like for my Father's Day present, and then she also wanted to give me a cup of coffee at the Broadmoor. Now, I've never been to the Broadmoor. I don't know if you've been to Broadmoor. You have the Seven Falls Resort, and then they got a little five-star restaurant there at the bottom of the falls, which is sort of the outpost, and then they've got this castle. So we do the waterfalls, and then we go to this, they call it a resort, but it just looks like a palatial, it's not one castle, it's like castles, and just going like, wow, can we afford coffee here? And Savannah said, no, Daddy, I saved up my money for this. I think I need to check my credit card limits before I even walk into the door. And we go there, and people are dressed in all kinds. It looks like The Great Gatsby. That's F. Scott Fitzgerald, if you've seen the movie, read the book. And it's just unbelievable. I found out later that it's one of the wealthiest people in the world was there having this conference on how to make more money here. And as if he didn't have enough. And so we went in there, and just like, wow. So we got coffee there after touring the whole thing, which just, he said, Dad, isn't this incredible? I said, yeah, this is incredible. They're not very happy, though, honey. You know, so... But we had our coffee. Unfortunately, it wasn't too bad. They had some mercy on us in the coffee shop, but it wasn't the big restaurant. But, those folks weren't any happier than us. And I suppose if you went across town to one of the poor section, you'd find a lot more happy people in something. If you just thought that that was happiness in life. And we get trapped because if you look at the magazines and you look at the TV, you look at all kinds of things, why we're sort of gradually seduced into believing that there's happiness in cars and money and prestige and power and fame and fortune. But the truth is, that's not the purpose of life. If that's what you think will bring happiness, you're only going to find you're chasing after the wind. And Solomon did it for us. So he can save you a lot of years in life if you just look at Solomon. He says, no, listen, it's from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat and find enjoyment in life? The person who pleases God, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. I'll close with this story from Tolstoy, one of the greatest writers in all of human history, a great Russian writer, and who had experienced some incredible moments of fame and fortune in life, and then found Christ as Savior and Lord. And I challenge you, sometimes we think, well, gee, Christianity is just in a corner somewhere, but I want to challenge you to know that some of the greatest writers in all of human history, some of the greatest artists in all of human history were people of deep faith. And so Tolstoy is a person of deep faith, wrote War and Peace and had incredible fame from that. But he wrote a short story called The Death of Ivan Illich, which is a great short story. And it's about Ivan Illich. And Ivan Illich was like a lot of us. And he just went through the motions in life, what his parents had told him. So he went through the course of academics, and he became an attorney just because his parents wanted that. He could find some modicum of prestige and money. He married the right person rather than the love of his life. And he had children, and he had a home, and he had success. And he just had all the things that made it look good, but inside, he was empty. And then one day, Ivan feels there's something wrong, and he goes to the doctor. And the doctor tells Ivan Illich that everything is going to be okay. But Ivan Illich looks into his eyes and realizes the doctor is lying to him and that he's dying. And so he knows he only has days to live. And so with that, he goes home and he just sinks into this period of great depression, into this pit of depression and meaninglessness. His life was meaningless before. It's even more meaningless. And so He is filled with his self-loathing and hatred of himself and his life and everything around him. And in this pain and anguish, his death, like his life, ends up being just more self-absorbed. And in the closing moments of life, his wife is with him, and he has even sort of a loathing of his wife, and he's sort of flailing about in pain, and his eyes are closed, and unbeknownst to him, his little boy slips into the room up next to the bed, and his hand happens to land on the little boy's head, and he opens his eyes, and he looks in the face of his young boy, and he sees tears going down this child's face, and all of a sudden, Ivan says, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cause you all this pain." He realized he's been such a bad example, and in that moment, he looks at his wife, and he feels this moment of regret and forgiveness, and all of a sudden, even though his life is so short, it's like his life has completely changed in the closing moments of life, and the things that he has so pursued seem to slip away. And he realizes that it's in God, and it's in forgiveness, and it's in the right relationship with family. And it's so good that he finds the meaning in life in the end of life, but so sad that he waits to the end of life to find the meaning in life. And I think Tolstoy points us in the right direction, saying if you think that those are the things that are going to give you meaning in life, it's just going to be chasing after the wind. But truly, the things that bring us happiness and life, or the things that stand for all eternity, is our relationship with God, our relationship with family. And so I challenge you today to think about the words of Jesus. Jesus said this, "But seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." Are your purpose and priorities those that God would have you, or are you just chasing after the wind? Learn from Solomon. Learn the meaning of life. And in your searching, find the things that matter most in life, because it's about right relationship with God and right relationship with family. Will you join me in prayer? Lord, sometimes in life we find ourselves searching for the things that mean most in life, and it can just be like vapor evaporating in the morning. So help us to search in a place where we can find only the true meaning of life, which is in your grace and love. Renew us, restore us, help our priorities and purpose to be those you'd have for us. In the name of Christ our Lord, and all God's people said, amen.